Rewind, your week in review is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin, it's how we get there.
Because I don't want to go backwards. I want to keep going forward together. That's exactly where we're going to go. God bless.
I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
This is Rewind, the Wisconsin Eye and WisPolitics summary of this week. First, WisEye was there. A speaker at a press conference says K-12 public schools are underfunded. Mark Pocan fires up the delegates. The Democratic State Convention. You have pro-athletes discussed at the meeting of the Wisconsin Tech Council. And the Israeli ambassador to the United States, speaks to the Milwaukee Rotary. WisEye was there.
The first thing we've seen is that the revenue limits that bind how much districts are allowed to spend are unfair, and they're creating have and have not districts that is underserving our communities and our kids. We've seen that the funding formula is broken, and it's not doing the things that it's supposed to be doing. It's making it so that certain kids in certain districts are particularly underserved, and it's not addressing the needs of kids in poverty, kids who speak English as a second language, and children with disabilities.
We have a great field of candidates for governor. Now, I don't know if you remember, last year at convention, I lamented how the GOP was saying that we were so afraid to take on Scott Walker that we couldn't field a candidate. And I told you, don't worry, we will have some great candidates. Well, I didn't underpromise, but maybe I over-delivered a bit.
There is a silver lining to this very dark cloud of the nuclear deal with Iran. And the silver lining is that it's brought Israel and parts of the Arab world together. And what we've seen happening in the last few years is that the Arab states in the Gulf understand for the first time that Israel is not their enemy, that Israel is potential ally for confronting common enemies.
I think Wisconsin is better off for the fact that J.J. Watt plays in Houston. I think Wisconsin is also better off that Frank Kaminsky came from Illinois, right? And even more so that Aaron Rodgers is from Chico. And I think those are things that we should celebrate. And again, the Green Bay Packers would not be a great team if all their players had to be born and raised in Green Bay. They'd probably be really bad. and so we should think about that in terms of entrepreneurship. We should celebrate the opportunities and the funding sources outside of the state, because nevertheless, that spirit or that positivity will still come back to us as a state.
We have had an unfortunate state of affairs in Wisconsin where there has not been enough good instruction for teachers about how to teach reading, and that when teachers are given the opportunity to learn this information, they're hungry for it. And so whether that's about institutional prerogatives of what has to happen with continuing education, crucially, what do we do to make sure that reading instruction continues to be elevated going forward in all levels of education? We know it matters to teachers. We know it matters desperately for students.
The good news, JR, is that the governor's office announced that we're getting $160 million under the infrastructure for Rebuilding America program, $160 million. The bad news is the governor asked for $246, which is a difference of obviously $86 million. Now, talk to me about how this money is going to be used.
Well, it's to help rebuild I-94 North South, to expand it. If you recall, we have to go back to a history lesson real quick. So we have the Marquette interchange that was rebuilt during the Doyle years. There was a push for the Marquette the Zoo interchange rebuilt, but Doyle instead went down 994, which goes through Racine and Kenosha counties, which are kind of key for his reelection in 06. Began the expansion there. 94 is now 8 lanes in Kenosha County, down where my mom lives. Racine, however, it is not. It's still 6.
Yep.
That, however, is put aside by Walker Republicans to focus on the Zoo, which is more important to them in Waukesha County, not the politics playing these things at all. And so now we've got 94 North South, a key corridor for the Foxconn project. As part of this entire thing, they made a pitch to the feds to get this money now. On average, we got 33
million
change.
Yes, in the last 5 years.
Years. So this is a big bump up from that. The question is, okay, how do you cover the other $80 million? The Walker administration has said, don't worry about it, we'll find ways to do it. But if you're Democrats, you're saying, well, wait, we're already seeing money from go to Foxconn that could be going to other projects.
Right.
What else is going to be impacted?
And
by
only
this?
Minutes ago, those four Democrats on the Joint Finance Committee put out this letter, which you and I saw. I'm just going to read one sentence. Wisconsin drivers and taxpayers deserve the opportunity to hear what the administration plans to divert, whether the administration plans to divert millions more to Foxconn after recovering $86 million less than they had sought from the federal government for this project. Now, Walker's spokesman Tom Evenson said, look, and the governor himself said, we're not going to hurt mm-hmm. projects outstate because of this. And the governor said, we'll still be able to keep the I-94 project where we want it. All lanes will be open in both directions by 2020. The project itself will be completed by 2021. And then Assembly Democratic leader hints, only Governor Walker could tout an $86 million shortfall as a victory. But still, the governor said this is the most we've ever gotten
yeah.
under this program.
It's more money. I mean, don't forget, 94 North-South under the original timeline should have been done in 2016. But Governor Walker and administration pushed it back years. So yes, this would move it back up to 2021. But it's because of priorities being elsewhere that it got pushed back that far.
Right.
Still, it's a good chunk of change to start this project.
But just this project doesn't do anything for the long-term impasse over how to pay for highways.
Oh, that's for another budget,
yeah,
Steve.
That's right. That's right. Well, in which case, let's move on. 316 people filed nomination papers, met the 5 o'clock last Friday deadline mm-hmm. to run on November 6th. Let's just run through those that have no major party opponents. Second District Congressman Mark Pocan, a Democrat, will not have any GOP opponent. State Senator Tim Carpenter, Democrat, Milwaukee. He will be unopposed. State Senator Steve Noss, Republican of Whitewater, unopposed. Janice Ringhan, Democrat, unopposed. And Waukesha County Senator Chris Kappinga, unopposed. No surprises there.
What's the common thread of all five of those seats?
You tell me.
They're extremely, extremely partisan, right?
Yes.
The tilt blue or red is very, very strong. So, I mean, Democrats, if you look, generally speaking, they found more candidates this year, I think, to run than in past years or last two cycles. To fill, Joe Wienicke used to say what? A rising tide lifts all boats.
All boats.
You have to have a boat in the water to catch the tide, right? So
yeah.
He tried to run as many people as he could. They seem to be trying to do that again, but you're not going to beat Tim Carpenter, Steve Noss. You're just not going to do it. So the question
Why?
Is, what's the effort? You know, what's the point?
Resource management.
Yeah, part of it. Or you can't find somebody who wants to be the sacrificial lamb in a district like that.
But when you and I go through the nomination papers, here's what jumped out at me. 22 Assembly Democrats have no Republican opponent. Now, mm-hmm. that is Speaker Voss playing defense and trying
Absolutely.
To hold on to his majority. And that includes, as we're going to note later, one Democrat's going to walk right into the Assembly, we're going to discuss that later, without any primary or general election opponent.
It is surprising that you have a congressional candidate without a major party opponent. I mean, the second is not the third, but if you had opponent in the third 2 years ago, Ron Kind might not be a congressman anymore because Donald Trump won his seat. Republicans passed up the chance to challenge him because they figured, well, he wins every time anyway, so what's the point? Now, there are other layers of that. If Ron Kind had an opponent, would he have then had an active campaign? Mm-hmm. Would he have turned out voters in western Wisconsin? If he had, would Jennifer Schilling have won her seat by more than 80-some votes? Would Hillary Clinton have done better in western Wisconsin had the Kind machine been operating?
Okay.
All kinds of things like that. But said, it's a seat in Congress, and you're not having a major party challenge.
22 Assembly Democrats have no Republican opponent. 5 Assembly Republicans. That's a pretty big imbalance. Representatives Kitchens, Skronsky, Allen, Nalen, and Duco. And then I'm intrigued, just to wrap up this topic, 4 mm-hmm. Milwaukee Democrats have primaries. Representatives Goyke, Kessler, Zepnik, and Zamarripa. I believe Mr. Kessler's opponent was lined up by Lena Taylor, because
Heard
who did
thing.
Mr. Kessler endorse in the 2 years ago when it was Mandela versus Lee, anyway.
I think Mr. Barnes.
Yes.
The Zepnik one we knew was coming. I mean, that's been queued up for a while. The question that I have and been asking folks about is, how real is other Milwaukee primaries? Because, like, Joe Costas had primaries before and beaten him back fairly easily. Evan's new one, Kessler. One thing about Evan and Fred, they both, I think, are Caucasian males who represent majority-minority districts.
Yes.
So there's a racial aspect to that as well.
I know that's right, with Goyke's seat, yeah.
There's also the school choice issue, things like that, that I haven't met the candidates yet to know, like, what their issues are. Those are things to watch, because Milwaukee, we always have, it seems like, these fights of Lena Taylor versus Chris Abley, or Lena Taylor versus Chris Larson, kind of things percolating, and there's, like, this whole kind of cauldron of politics in Milwaukee.
Yeah, and the arbiter of this is the Elections Commission, which is going to meet Monday. And by the way, you can watch that Election Commission meeting live on Wisconsin Eye. So let's just quickly work through what their task on Monday. There's challenges to mm-hmm. Democratic candidate Gronick for governor. There's a challenge to Democratic candidate for governor, Representative Dana Walks. In response, the Gronick campaign says, this challenge by the Republican Party targets black and brown signers. The Walks campaign is playing a little offense, saying GOP complaint against my nomination papers proves that Dana Walks is a serious threat. Then you have challenges to the nomination papers of Republican U.S. Senate candidate Kevin Nicholson, fourth District Congressional candidate Tim Rogers, State Senate candidate in the 29th District Richard Pulker. Any surprises there? There's always challenges.
I'm not a lawyer, so I'm not going to tell you that I can say that this one's valid, this one's not. What I can tell you is the first thing the Elias operatives do when they get the list of signatures in are see who turned in 201 when you need 200, mm-hmm. who turned in 420 when you need 400, who turned in 1,010. See somebody who's close to the threshold and see if you knock some off. If nothing else, it occupies them for a week. It puts a little bit of extra expense in the campaign, and it gives them possibly a bad headline. I mean, that's part of they both sides do this all the time.
Right. And then we have six challenges to assembly candidates. Charisse Daniels in the 37th, Jim Duncan in the 57th, Lauren Oldenburg in the 96th, Maria Villarreal in the 8th, Thomas Leaguer in the 76th, and Gabriel Zurzlong, sorry if I mangled your name, in the 43rd.
Yeah. Well, Oldenburg, that's a seat at the top of the ticket that's got a decent Dem lean to it. Republicans keep winning at the assembly level. He's the only Republican who's registered for the seat, if I remember correctly. So if you knock him off the ballot, it's a guaranteed Dem win, right? So that's also part of the calculation. I mean, honestly, of all these, the real problem is for Ms. Daniels, she didn't file a response by yesterday's deadline to the complaint against her, which suggests to people I talk to that she has bigger things to worry about than being knocked off the ballot, because the Watertown Police Department has opened a criminal investigation into the alleged fraud in her, her nomination papers. That's a big problem for her. Beyond whether she can make the ballot.
Yeah. And just one more reminder, the Elections Commission meeting will be carried live on Wisconsin Eye. Okay. Walker played some offense last week. Mm-hmm. He opened up a new health care ad in which he said, look, Wisconsin had to allot $200 million, $150 from the feds, $50 from savings from our MA program to hold down Obamacare premiums because, quote, we can't wait for Wisconsin to get the job done. Democrats said, yeah, but if Wisconsin would have applied and taken the Medicaid expansion, we'd have $1 billion more over several years for health care. And let's talk about his ad first.
NBC had a poll out this week, the NBC Wall Street Journal maybe. Health care, number one issue, but not by much, but over, I think, the economy. Health care, number one issue. And on that issue, Dems were favorable overwhelmingly over Republicans for their position on it, to take care of that issue. I've been told for months that health care is number one issue, a top issue in Wisconsin for certain demographics, particularly suburban women, who, by the way, Republicans have been hemorrhaging for how many months now?
Yeah.
This is Walker checking out the boxes of the people he needs to address to keep a coalition together, hopefully to get to 50% plus one or whatever he needs to win in November. It's part of the Walker plan of, you know, with these messages.
Yeah. And then the governor also announced a task force on the problems in America's dairyland. We have low milk prices, mm-hmm. we have an aging farming, and now we have the threat of tariffs. What are they going to do?
But they've been hit the triple whammy. Don't forget the immigration issue that they've been dealing with, that they're, you know, there are dairy farmers which are struggling to find workers, all kinds of stuff going on. Again, Walker is trying to stitch together coalitions to keep at least a plurality to win in November.
Yeah, but this panel and the task force will not be reporting in time for the November 6th election.
I'm not sure if the report's the important piece of that, Steve.
Okay, maybe.
It may be the effort, right?
To be seen, yes, yeah. Yes. The idea that they'll have three or four meetings, I get it. Okay, now let's turn to the Democratic Convention. Before we hear from all 10 of the candidates, and we're going to play snippets from each of their speeches, let's talk about your straw poll, JR. Talk about the framework, who voted. I know there were 798 votes, but kind of set the table.
We allow delegates, alternates, and registered guests to vote, so long as you've actually like, basically paid to be there, you know, we allow you to vote in the straw poll. Typically, we'll get like 400, 300, 500 votes, you know. We got 800. We ran out of ballots at 10:30 on Saturday morning, which is unusual for us. Usually we're trying to like get the last couple votes rounded up, yeah. You know, noon, 1 o'clock, where we can go home. This was a sign of what happens when you have a crowded Democratic field with candidates who are whipping their supporters to go out and vote. I mean, I know Kel DeRoy's, I believe Malin Mitchell, I know for sure Matt Flynn all sent stuff to supporters trying to get them to go out and vote or call delegates to go out to vote.
Yeah.
And it showed a little bit for Kel that she is an early indication of organizational effort on her behalf. And two, it paints a picture of how she could get the nomination in August, right? If you have a top tier that is, let's use straw poll as a cutoff, right? If the top five are going to be Kelda, Malin Mitchell, Tony Evers, Andy Gronick, Dana Walks, she stands out because why? She's the only female candidate in the top tier of five people, right?
She's also 37 or 38 years old.
So now, Kathleen Vinehout is kind of trying to be the progressive champion for a while in this field. Her votes on some gun bills, gun stuff at the end of the legislative session has taken some air out of that balloon a little bit. She should have done better in a straw poll. She's won it before.
Mm-hmm.
These are kind of like her crowd that she didn't do as well. Maybe take some air out of her balloon. So if you focus on that top five, just for argument's sake, take the straw poll as like the top five for a field. There's your path for Kel DeRoy's. I mean, if you're the only female candidate in a crowded primary, a viable female candidate, crowded primary for Democrats, that's a bonus for you. But she has to have the money, your name up on the air, because just because you want a straw poll of, we have a pool of 1,500 people, 1,300 people at a convention, 800 votes, we're talking 600,000 plus will turn out and vote in August, that primary. She's not well known in places like Eau Claire, Wausau, La Crosse. I mean, it's just, she's a former state lawmaker. It's a common problem for all these folks. Tony Evers has no residual name ID. He's run statewide four times. Paul Soglin has name ID from being a public official for longer than I've been alive. These guys have something built in from that time. These other folks have to have the money to get up on the air and build their name ID.
Okay, JR, but I want to come back too. I want to compare your straw poll results to the March Marquette University poll, where Kelda, who won your straw poll, she was last, fourth, in terms of do you know this candidate? You have the favorability rating of Kelda Roy's in the March Marquette poll was last with Andy Gronick at 4%. So she wins your poll. Now,
if you look at crosstabs, she got one vote. In the head-to-head, she got one vote in the primary, less than 1% of the vote.
And Mr. Soglin, who didn't do very well at the straw poll, as we're showing with our graphic, he, in the March Marquette poll, was third.
Mm-hmm.
So what has happened?
Perfect illustration of you have a group of people who are plugged in and paying attention versus an electorate that still isn't quite aware there's a primary going on because they're not seeing what? They're not seeing TV ads, not hearing the radio. Andy Gronick on the air for the first time this week with a radio ad in Milwaukee. That's the only paid media I've seen in like the last couple of months. This is an illustration of name ID. Also illustration of why these guys are so unhappy with the WBA and dropping another opportunity to be in front of like a statewide audience and talk to them.
Yeah, we'll get to the WBA in a minute. Okay, Wisconsin Eye has culled the best sound bites, we hope, we suggest, from each of these 10 speakers. And JR and I are going to do them in blocks of three, three, and then four. So right now, let's hear the highlights of the speeches from Kel DeRoy's, Malin Mitchell, and Tony Evers, please.
It is time to make sure that all workers, from family farmers to healthcare workers to the self-employed, earn a living wage, have affordable health care, and can opt into a stable, secure public retirement system. It is time to stop the shame of being the worst state in the nation for African Americans. Time to end mass incarceration, end voter suppression, end the racial disparities and infant mortality. We're done voting against things, aren't we? We're done arguing about the past. It's time for a new generation of leaders with a hopeful vision for our future. Together, we will build our Wisconsin into the best place to raise a family and the best place to grow a business.
I ran for lieutenant governor in 2012. I got to meet a lot of you then. In 2012, I always tell Tony I got 1,156,520 votes. Ish. But who's counting? Can we make sure we take care of all citizens of this state, all Wisconsinites? And the answer to you is we can do that. But we can only do that together. And that's why I'm running for governor. It means that we have family-supporting jobs. I've come out for $15 an hour before it was sexy. $15 an hour is the floor. We can have our first African-American governor. But we got to make history. We not only make history, but we have to make it count. And we need a fierce urgency of now to make sure we win this thing. We take it to Scott Walker. I'm the person to do it. Thank you all for your support.
I'm running for governor because I'm goddamn sick and tired of Scott Walker gutting our public schools. Health care is a right. And as governor, I can promise you not only will we protect those with pre-existing conditions, but we'll also take the Medicaid money, the expansion money. I beat cancer and I can beat Scott Walker. I've won statewide elections 3 times. I've actually run things, run a school, or run a school district. I'm now in charge of an agency that's ultimately responsible for 860,000 kids and 100,000 adults that work with them. We can win this race next November. We must seize the day.
Okay, my first impression, JR, let's go down by speakers. Kelda says it's time for a new generation of leaders. Clearly a backhand reference to the fact that Mr. Flynn is 70 and others are appreciably older. Malin says 1,156,520 votes. Who's counting? In a bid for lieutenant governor in the 2012 recall. Mm-hmm. And Tony says he's goddamn sick and tired of underfunding. And then the governor came out with a press release saying it's really sad that Mr. Evers took the Lord's name in vain. So those are my takes.
Tony Evers said, well, where were you, Governor Walker, when President Trump talked about blank hole countries? Where were you about this? I mean, that was total political catnip this week. But this first batch of three illustrates a question that I've had and asked people about the last few months. Do Democrats need somebody who's going to inspire people come November, or just need a credible candidate to ride what could be a blue wave in a different environment Scott Walker's running in 2010, 2012, and 2014? In 10 and 14, he had a Republican wave behind him, national Republican wave, running against the party in power in the White House. In 2012, we had a situation where not only was it both sides motivated, but you had a segment of the population who said, we may not like what he did, but it wasn't illegal. We're not going to recall somebody for doing something that was not illegal. So much different. If Scott Walker's fighting a blue wave, what's that mean? Do you need a younger candidate like Roy's, a possibly first-time African-American governor like Mitchell? Do you need something like that to inspire the troops? Or just having Tony Evers, who can inspire in his own way, don't get me wrong, mm-hmm. but having a credible hand who has got some gravitas in terms of like policy, can be the person to say, okay, I can ride the wave and stand total Walker on a stage. I don't know the answer to that right now.
Yeah, that's a good analysis. Okay, time now for snippets from the speeches of Andy Gronick and Dana Walks and Mike McCabe, please.
When somebody attacks our schools and our school teachers, when somebody attacks our jobs and our wages, when somebody destabilizes healthcare and goes after our environment, I can't sit on the sidelines for one more moment. The bottom line is Scott Walker has beaten the establishment politician 3 times in a row. So I want to ask every single one of you, do you expect to do something over and over and over again and have different results? Anybody? Well, it's time to do something different, because I'll tell you what, it's going to take a fighter.
Wisconsin is better than Scott Walker. Wisconsin is the home of the progressive movement. We created the Wisconsin idea. It was the fundamental notion that science and economics and every discipline of our universities should work hand in hand with government. We made policy crafted on what we could do in this world that was good. Well, folks, when I'm governor, the Wisconsin idea is making a comeback. Right now, we're living in Governor Walker's Wisconsin, but I know that Wisconsin is better than Walker. In Scott Walker's Wisconsin, our unemployment rate may be low, but you've got to work 2 jobs instead of one to make ends meet. In our Wisconsin, we're going to have higher wages, $15 an hour, collective bargaining, dignity for workers, and pay equity. That's what we're going
to
have.
We have to deal with the reality that there is a cancer growing in the body of our democracy that must be cut out. We have allowed cronyism and corruption and what amounts to legal bribery to take root in our state, and it must be uprooted. Because we will never get living wages from a dying democracy. We will never get good health care from a sick political system. We will never get clean air and clean water from dirty politics. And we will never get anything more than thoughts and prayers after each new mass shooting as long as elected officials are paid to take no other action.
Just quickly, JR, Mr. Gronick says, look, we Democrats have been running career politicians. I'm the antithesis of that. That's why I could take it to him. Mr. Walks brings up somewhat of a populist appeal, but then McCabe just stands there without notes, and Mr. Blue Jeans just gives them really progressive slash populist hell.
Gronick was one of the ones. Remember, they had a 5-minute limit on the microphone. Gronick got cut off and tried to keep speaking and yelling from the stage. You need a fighter.
Yep.
He's trying to carve a niche in that way. McCabe has got this, trying to appeal to the progressive wing of the party, much like Kathleen Vinaugh's been trying to do.
Yep.
They don't have financial resources right now to really boost them to do that. So that may not be enough.
We're
watching to see, can he put more money in, personal money in,
yeah,
to kind of, again, get up on the air, run some TV or radio, and vault in this top tier. You know, that's one thing to watch with all these guys at this point.
Okay, now it's time to hear from the final four speakers. Candidates for governor of the Democratic State Convention, Senator Kathleen Vinaugh, Matt Flynn, Kenosha newcomer Josh Paid, and Madison Mayor Paul Soglin. Let's hear from their speeches.
Budgets are about choices. Budgets reflect our values and priorities, such as fairness and opportunity. Rachel is my priority. Health care for her family, great schools for her kids, free tuition for her to learn new skills, safe streets, parks, clean water, public transit to get home. Let's fix the UW, hire back the scientists, put them to work helping us deal with climate change so her grandchildren still have a planet and a state filled with natural resources.
I will make Walker answer for what he's done to Wisconsin. He will answer for what he's done to higher education, to K-12. He'll answer what he's done to wages and to the shabby condition of our roads. But most of all, he's going to be made to answer for what he did about Foxconn. It's a crooked deal, and I'm going to put an end to it. It's an unconstitutional deal, and when I am governor, I'll go to court and stop it, right on the spot. But this election is a lot more about not so much Scott Walker's bad ideas, but our great democratic ideas. I will legalize marijuana, and I will pardon everybody in the jails and prisons of this state who are there for a minor possession offense. I'll end mass incarceration, and I'll uphold the new Bill of Rights, the digital Bill of Rights, which is broadband access for everybody in the state and net neutrality. And I'll fully fund, not just K-12, pre-K 14, early childhood, first 2 years tuition-free to any in-state resident of university and technical college.
This November, we are going to have a big decision to make. All across the state of Wisconsin, voters are going to go and they're going to decide whether they're going to have 4 more years of cronyism, trickle-down economics, divisive politics, and lower expectations for people who are going into school, graduating from school, starting a job, or trying to find a new job. We can change that trajectory. We can make it so that working men and women have a new hope and make a different decision, a real choice. But it's not just gonna happen because we want it to happen. We have to work for it. We need leadership, a fresh start, and a new vision for the state of Wisconsin.
You deserve a candidate who will dismantle the Foxconn deal and reallocate those tax credits to Wisconsin families with benefits, revenues for our public schools, high-speed internet from one end of the state to the other, and fix the roads and the public transit systems, and right the health care system to your standards, not the Koch brothers. We Democrats have a lot of candidates, but I'm the only one who understands that viable families need housing. Housing is first. Transportation, quality child care. Health care, and that includes nutrition, behavioral health, and substance abuse treatment, especially for veterans, seniors, families of color, and all immigrants. And I will protect dreamers.
Kathleen Vineout says, I'm going to be the champion of Rachel, who is a single mother earning the minimum wage in southeast Wisconsin. Got very emotional about that. Matt Flynn makes sweeping promises. I'll be in court the day I'm elected to stop Foxconn. Josh Pade just introduced himself. And Paul Soglin got one vote in your poll, and then his campaign manager said, your poll is meaningless. And if straw polls counted, we would have President Alan Cranston, a reference to 1983, when former California Senator Alan Cranston beat Walter Mondale.
So, Kathleen Vineout, Mike McCabe have a similar issue where I talked to people this week who thought this was their crowd at convention. They should have done better in the straw poll. They're both trying to fight for that kind of progressive lane. Matt Flynn actually got booed, if you listen closely, from the back of the room. Now, I'm not sure whose supporters they were, but the whole thing about the Milwaukee Archdiocese is an issue for him. Representing the Archdiocese during the priest abuse scandal. Now, he's trying to make the argument he cleaned things up, but that's still a weight around his neck. Josh Pade, I don't think is going to be a factor just yet. Paul Soglin, there's a point. I mean, it's a straw poll. You're talking people give up 2 days of a summer weekend to listen to speeches for 8 hours. At the same time, what's Paul Soglin's campaign right now? It's a go to a supper club and the voters come to him. We're not seeing real evidence of him being an aggressive campaigner for this nomination. And the complaint that I hear is that he seems to think this thing's just going to like arrive at his doorstep and he's just going to have to grab it and that's it. He has the advantage of name ID, but that's not enough to win the nomination and beat Scott Walker.
Okay, good. We're in overtime here, so give us quickly your stock picks.
Stosh Krasinski.
Rising.
He is going to claim a seat in the Assembly, barring a miraculous writing campaign, without lifting a finger between now and November.
Yeah.
Because he got no primary opponent and no general election opponent for a very Democratic seat. Now, it's no surprise they got no Republican opponent.
It's a seat of Eric Genrich, who's running for mayor of Green Bay, yes.
But the fact he can take off from now until November is a reflection of the work he did pre-June 1 to lay a foundation to, like, lock up support in this district. He's going to become, you know, the next member of the Assembly from the 90th Assembly District.
Mixed.
So special elections next week.
Tuesday, Senate District 1, Assembly
District
42.
All kinds of stuff going on.
You know, nastiness out there.
Late money going on. We found out from 20-some years ago that John Plumer, the 42nd, had a disorderly conduct about something happened at home with his wife and his daughter's neighbor. There's social media posts flying around. Yep. In the first, we're seeing more of a traditional, like, kind of some TV ads, that kind of stuff. Like, this is the takeaway from all this, okay? We've been talking about Blue Wave since January. If Democrats win both these seats, and they should not win these seats, these are Republican-leaning seats. If they win both, the talk of the Blue Wave takes off, right? If it's a split decision, you can still make the argument of, okay, there's a blue wave coming because we won a Republican seat. If Republicans win both seats, which they should do, all right, based on the numbers, it gives them a chance to tamp down the talk of Blue Wave and a shot in the arm because they've won nothing since January in Wisconsin. This has been an opportunity for them. Now, the other caveat is, we know it's politics. However it comes down on Tuesday, there will be spin to match the results from both sides, right? But that's one takeaway I've heard this week about those results.
Falling.
Broadcasters Association, they came out saying we're going to have debates with the primaries, with the Senate, the Republican Senate field, and Democratic gubernatorial field. Limited four candidates,
yes.
Tops. We're going to have a requirement that you raise at least $250,000 to be eligible.
To be viable. That's
and use the Marquette poll,
yeah.
Or at least closest to the debate, to
determine who's invited.
Which means one poll with a margin of error in a field that could be 7 points,
yes.
Would be defined top four.
Which is why Charles Franklin
complained, don't use our poll that way.
Please don't use our poll this way.
Then they say we're looking at change. We've heard you were looking at changes. And then they back down and just say we're not going to do anything. The people I talked to said, look, you know, one, Democrats are kind of seething because they want somebody to narrow the field. They want somebody to say, okay, here is who we're going to have be viable. And this was an opportunity to have that actually happen, to have four, maybe a couple more people, address statewide audience. That's been taken away now. So they're like, stick to your guns. Like, you said this is going to be your criteria, stick to your criteria. Other people saying, why didn't you go 5 or 6 or go 90 minutes or have 2 debates? Have one big kid table, one that's on TV live, one small kid table.
Like the broadcast. Republicans did in 2016.
And even like take that small kid table and
nationally
make it,
for presidents,
and put it on live stream it if you don't have the airtime for it. I mean, there are all kinds of options. This looked like they were pushed back by others and gave in and just quit. And it's also a loss for Republicans. I mean, for Leah Vukmir and Kevin Nicholson, they're losing a chance to be in a statewide audience because folks say, okay, we're not doing any of it.
Yep.
Just going to back off.
Now they're just going to focus on November 7 general elections.
Yes.
Okay, I'm writing down my predictions for Tuesday special elections. We'll see if I'm right. I'm Steve Walters.
And I'm J.R. Ross.
That's Rewind for June 8.
Rewind, your week in review, is sponsored by the Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. Sharing one goal, enhancing the quality of life in Wisconsin through the development and maintenance of a strong transportation network. The Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin. It's how we get there.